Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to this episode of A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and we present to you discussions about legal and current events and a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So our guest tonight will not make those excuses for the racist conduct that we've seen and that we continue to see, which really is distractions. These are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. And so, once again, my name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I'm an attorney. And tonight's topic, we have a really great topic tonight. We're going to talk about exclusion, the law of exclusion and beyond. And in that context, we want to talk to our brother, Warren Muhammad, who's an attorney. And Brother Warren has actually written a book called A Case for Separation. So he's going to make that case tonight for us, giving us some historical perspectives and beyond. And we also have another guest who is an entrepreneur, businessman, and a longtime brother in the nation. So let me go ahead and introduce them and then go ahead and open up their mics. Again, this is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and this is A Time for Justice. So first of all, we have Brother Warren Muhammad, who we've had on the show. He's been so gracious. He comes on and he talks to us. He's been an attorney for a very long time, actually becoming an attorney in 1979. This brother has practiced in the fields of entertainment law. Brother Warren has extensive experience in personal injury, wrongful death, medical mal. He's practiced business law and transactional law. And I want to make sure that I mention tonight, my producer, my daughter, she told me to make sure that I mention that Brother Warren was appointed by the mayor in 2012 as an associate judge in the municipal courts for the city of Houston. And in 2014, he was reappointed for a second term as mayor. Also, Brother Warren is one of the board members, CEO over at the Acres Home Chamber of Commerce, which is a neighborhood in Houston and a very historic area. So thank you, Brother Warren, for coming on. I want to go ahead and open up your mic, Brother Warren.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pam, and to all your listening audience. I'm honored and thrilled again to be on your illustrious show and look forward to an interesting discussion tonight.
Yes, sir. All praises are due to Allah. The honor is ours. Thank you again for coming. All praises are due to Allah. And so let me go ahead and introduce Brother Khalil Muhammad. Brother Khalil Muhammad of Houston, Texas, is the former regional captain of the Southwest region of the Nation of Islam. Brother Khalil is a member of the nation for 40 years, and he is self-employed at f6hosting.com. Brother Khalil Muhammad is married to Sister Violet Muhammad and the father of four sons, Warren, Robert, Lewis, and Lee Muhammad. Striving to be a helper in the cause of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And again, he is presently a web developer and the owner of F6 Enterprises. I know he's saying presently because our brother is an entrepreneur and he has been a bit, you know, he's been involved with so many different businesses, and he is just, he has such a wealth of experience and knowledge as a business owner and an entrepreneur as well. So I want to go ahead and open up Brother Khalil's mic.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me?
We hear you really well. Thank you, Brother Khalil. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome
for
to the show.
Me. And thank you for the invitation. I'm honored, and I'm looking forward to hearing my big brother, Brother Attorney Muhammad, with his vast amount of knowledge about separation and, you know, injustice here in America. So thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. All right, so we want to go ahead and open up our show, and I want to put this in context with some of our current events. Unfortunately, we have seen once again the killing of a young 22-year-old in Minnesota by the name of Amir Locke. Amir was murdered, like we say, in Minnesota, and it really does bring to mind the Casual Killing Act of 1669, where there was a law that permitted any slaver or white person to legally murder an enslaved black person without any consequences. As we know, Brother Amir was shot dead by the Minneapolis police. They're saying it was a no-knock warrant. You know, his father is saying that my son was executed on 2/2/22. That's what Ms. Wells says. I believe that's his mother. And just briefly, we are hearing that on Wednesday, February 2nd, the police entered a apartment before 7 on a no-knock warrant, and approximately 9 seconds into the entry, it seems like he was shot. And so, you know, again, this is Casual Killing Act, where black people were killed without consequences, and it seems like that mindset still exists. And I wanted to say that it's in that context that we want to talk to Brother Warren tonight on his book, A Case for Separation, because again, real briefly, we talked about Brian Flores, who filed this major lawsuit against the NFL, where he discusses a lot of the plantation-like, and that's of course my words, that it's a plantation-like place where, you know, blacks are just discriminated against, excluded. And that's the word we're using tonight, exclusion. So I want to go ahead and open up Brother Warren for this conversation. Once again, thank you for coming on. So, Brother Warren, let's begin by asking you, you know, just about, like, what made you start this book project, and talk to us about its importance today.
Thank you, Sister Pam. To begin with, I really never thought about or entertained an idea of writing a book about separation. it grew really organically, because over a period of time spanning, you know, several years, I would give lectures at the mosque. And I want to thank our student original Minister Abdul Halim Muhammad for allowing me the opportunity to occasionally take the rostrum and give a presentation. I never really saw myself as a preacher or a minister, so to speak, but I am a researcher. And one of the first courses, as I'm sure applies to you as well, Sister Pam, one of the first courses that we take in law school is research and writing. Mm-hmm. Research and writing is a staple in the practice of law, you have to be able to research issues, research cases and information, and then assemble it into a presentation as part of your advocacy. So from time to time, I would research certain things or different subjects or topics related to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in our current condition, and be allowed to deliver presentation at the mosque on those, and sometimes in other settings as well. And what would happen from time to time, and quite often people would ask me, where could they get copy of the lecture? Where could they get some of the information that I had researched and presented? Or where could they get the PowerPoint? So over time, as I would give these lectures, people would continue to ask that. So I just had the epiphany, well, maybe I should just transcribe those lectures and assemble them in book form, and then they would be available for anyone who would want to see, you know, what those lectures were about or revisit some of that information. So that's really how it grew about, was giving those lectures, and they would be recorded. So I started having my secretary transcribe the lectures, and then I eventually assembled them, edited it to a degree so they would be in a readable format. And as I went through many of the lectures, I found a common theme was in, which is a major component of the teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it's presented and delivered by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So I titled the book, A Case for Separation, as if I was presenting information as an advocate to prove our case or justification of our case for our position on separation. So that's kind of how it came about.
Okay. Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. So going right in, I'm going to start with page 7. There's a quote that I'm taking in out of a paragraph. And you say that slaves were property and slaveholders had a absolute right to take their property with them, even into free states or territories. And you talked about the rhetoric in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence about liberty, freedom, being created equal, and so on. And you say it was seldom considered applicable to blacks, slave or free. And you say, seen as a subservient race, they were excluded from consideration as members of society and had few rights. And that part about being excluded from consideration as members of society and had few rights, that stuck out at me because I think, you know, if you can explain to us some of that concept, because it still exists today, and I think it's at a root of an issue that we're seeing, why separation is really needed as well. So is that, you know, something that you care to speak on, Brother Warren?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to take the liberty, Sister Pam, to encourage my brother Khalil to speak up or step in whenever he sees fit or spirit moves him. He's much more than what you read about him. He's a dear friend, but he played a major role in teaching me and helping to form me as a soldier in the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
And he's a giant among men as we know him, and just when you see the minister walking down those steps at the nation's capital at the Million Man
yes,
March,
sir. Yes,
and
sir.
You saw those men around him, our brother
okay.
was one of those men. So I just wanted
oh,
to
beautiful.
Do it. But it, yeah.
Beautiful.
But
praise this be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. Where I was going with that was that slavery was, I hate to use the word, but slavery was indigenous to America. Slavery
okay.
was a part of America from its very inception and foundation. And as we say, it existed for hundreds of years before on the American, what came to be the American continent. It had existed in the Western Hemisphere for hundreds of years before the United States Constitution was drafted. The Constitution was drafted in 1787. Well, we know that Sir John Hawkins first brought us here in 1555.
Right.
So that's over 200 years that we had been here as slaves. We were actually here well before then. We were indigenous to this land. That's another subject, another conversation, but we had been here for thousands of years already. But they did capture many of us and bring us here as slaves. So when the Constitution was adopted, it codified or it put into written law the fact of our being slaves and being property. So when it talks about no person could be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, that's in the Bill of Rights. Well, in the Fifth Amendment, when it says no person could be deprived of property, they were talking about us. Mm. They were not talking about a person could be deprived of their wagon or or their chicken.
Yes, sir.
You know, they were talking about no person could be deprived of their slaves who were property without due process of law. And that the slaves had a absolute right to take their property. So that was a code word to keep from saying slaves in the Constitution. That was a code word. So they could take their property with them even in the free states or territory. So as we say on page 34, the rhetoric in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence about liberty, freedom, being created equal, and so on, was seldom considered applicable to black, slave, or free, because it was common understanding with 200 or more years of history, that we were, whether we were free or not, we were property, and we were not viewed in the same way that the white man was viewed.
Exactly. None of those laws actually apply to our benefit.
Mm. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And then further, in Article 9, Section 9 of Article 1 of the Constitution, it says such persons as any of non-existence shall think to properly to admit would be permitted until 1808. So the Constitution legalized the trade, the transatlantic slave trade from 1787 to 1801, that traffic in slaves would be permitted. And then after that, they saw the economic advantage in breeding slaves rather than importing new Africans into the country, because over time they realized that the more they brought people who had tasted freedom and lived as free men, there was always a problem in breaking them and making them into slaves. And that's why there's that hidden 64 years from 1555 to 1619, where they had to break the first Africans that were brought and have them to produce children and then take those children and rear them, having never known anything about freedom, to produce the quote-unquote Negro, and one who would be more easier to submit to slavery. So it was a problem in constantly bringing in slaves, African captives, and that's a loaded word when we say captives, which we'll discuss, I'm sure, in a little while. But bringing those captives into a country where there were Negroes who had never known freedom, seeing these people still talk about freedom, still speaking their language, many of them still praying to Allah as Muslims. That was a problem, mixing those people in amongst people who had never known anything than slave master. So they reached a point where they had to outlaw the continuation of bringing those people into America, and they relied on the slave factory production on the plantation to breed quote-unquote slaves who never knew anything about freedom, and God forbid that they ever found out anything about Islam or what Muslims were.
Yes, interesting.
If I could interject on that, brother, that brings to mind the Diversity Act that was introduced into law even before the Constitution through the colonial lords of England or whatever. The Diversity Acts was effectively created to make sure that there was always a larger amount of white than blacks and to keep us under control. So we are victims of really legislative laws. And even to this day, we don't understand. We talk about being diverse. You know, to be diverse means to dilute, to keep the majority of, you know, the majority whites, keep them in control. And so when we, as slaves, when we accepted the fact that, hey, we must be diverse, what we're saying is that we must keep ourselves diluted. And as a minority, especially in this country, the minority always lose. The majority always wins. So we have to understand the tricks that are and lies or the deceptions that are in the Constitution. I personally call the Constitution one of the most wickedly written documents ever existed because they had no intentions for us. They were talking about us as property. And all of those rights were given to the majority Caucasian race that was in rulership here. And it goes all the way back to colonial years. It was before the Constitution, before, you know, the Constitution was set up to separate themselves from London or from England or from the British colony. So, you know, that brings to mind something that everybody needs to really kind of research on that. The laws that were created by these people in the 1700s are really the basis of what's still going on today, why they can break into our houses and shoot us. And no repercussion. I don't know if we've ever had anybody executed or a white person executed for the murder of a black man or a black woman. So those constitutional laws, we really need to get into what the Constitution really means. You know, it behooves me sometimes when I hear black folks say our forefathers did this, that. Those were not our forefathers. Those were our enslavers. And we have to learn to, you know, understand that.
Yes, sir. Beautiful.
And if I'd like to follow up on something Brother Khalil said about, and we hear this all the time when we say, well, we have constitutional rights. And our rights under the Constitution, you know, and we, as the brother was saying, we really need to analyze what the Constitution is and what it does. Sure, that there are many instances where we can rely on some of the things in the Constitution, but from the mile high view, from the bird's eye view, we have to look at just what it does, and it is a document that codified really white supremacy.
Yes.
Even when you look at the 13th Amendment, they say, well, the 13th Amendment set us free. The 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as punishment for a crime. So there's an exception there.
Right.
Shall have, where the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to that jurisdiction. So that gave them a way to say, well, we're free from the hand. But we've got a mechanism where we can enslave you through our criminal justice system.
Yes, sir.
And we see that in operation full-blown still today. And it went back to just trivial laws such as vagrancy laws. If two or three blacks were standing on the corner, they could arrest you for being a vagrant and then put you on the chain gang. And then that's what Sam Cooke wrote about when he was traveling through the South and saw the men on the chain gang. He wrote that compelling song, "What's the Sound of the Men Working on the Chain? Chain Gang."
Right.
Those are men who have been made captives just for the purpose of throwing them back into slavery. And then the 14th Amendment, and it really, it starts off there as a scripture. It says, shall the prey be taken from the mighty and the lawful captive be delivered. That's in Isaiah 49:24. And when I read that, I said, shall the prey be taken from the mighty? Okay. And shall the lawful captive be delivered? And that really just turned my mind over and said, what is a lawful captive? How can you be a captive and it be lawful?
Yes.
Well,
sir.
There are two things. One is as one in a lawful war that's being waged, and you're on the losing side and you're taken captive because there was war being waged, and we were made captives into the Atlantic slave trade and brought here as captives. And that's a real distinction we need to hold on to, because we weren't brought here as slaves. We had been captured and sold to the slave master, or captured by the slave master and brought here as a captive. So under the 14th Amendment, it says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. So my position and my take on that is that 14th Amendment made us who are still captives into a citizen, which made us a quote-unquote lawful captive.
Mm.
But we never had
okay.
self-determination or the freedom to choose what our status would be. Nobody asked us anything.
Yes,
they didn't give us the
option
of staying here or going back or having some land of your own. They didn't give us any option. By decree, they said, we're going to make you a citizen, but at the same time, we're not going to give you the rights of a citizen.
Yes, sir. And you know what? To that point, I heard someone, a lady on TV today, a lawyer, and she was saying how they're going to make sure that this white person gets the rights, his due process rights. He's a citizen just like us or something. And I'm like, you all are saying, it's like, you know, black people don't have rights of citizenship. What are you talking about? You know, and when you talk about, I think, the 13th Amendment, we also look at the fact that people had to enforce the 13th Amendment. You could say that black people were free, but when we look at the collusion that took place where people could just walk up on somebody and take them off the road and force them into these slave camps without real convictions, that, you know, that was fair too. And so the enforcement of the 13th Amendment, I think, is another argument, Brother Warren, that I agree with you. And finally, I just wanted to say that the word exclusion, as Brother Khalil pointed out, how the Constitution today does render us in this servitude, slavery, because when we look at depopulation agendas, when we look at discrimination, denial of rights, we look at all these pretextual stops, you know, we look at words like bias. You know, these are words, and I mean, the list goes on and on. So this is the same exclusion, Brother Warren, that you pointed out in your book, where, you know, we had few rights, is what you say. So I wanted to go to the next part. You had a place in here where we talked, to me, it's about the mindset, you know, because we're looking at the response of our people during that time, and it wasn't always that I want to be included, you know, I want to be with you mindset, and so I think you talked about the spirit of rebellion, you know, but there's a quote where you quote on page 17 where there was a pastor and he said that the mindset that since they were unwilling to depart with the services because blacks had made fortunes for thousands, these Africans had made fortunes for thousands, so the mindset was that the free must be sent away and those who remain must be slaves. And I think with that, you kind of go into some of the mindsets of the people who, I guess, fought back or who really did not want to be a slave. Can you talk about that part?
Yes, ma'am. I think you're referring to my
Alan
page
Bishop.
Number.
Yes. Alan
is Richard
Bishop
Allen.
Is his name. Oh, okay. Richard Allen. Bishop.
Richard
yes,
Allen
sir.
Was the bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in the United States. And I think he was in Philadelphia. See, that was not universal agreement on what to do with us. We were always a problem here in America. White folk didn't know what to do with us, and they argued with each other about what to do with us. And black people, we argued among ourselves as what to do with them and what to do, you know, with ourselves. So the backdrop to this comment by Richard Allen was that there were efforts being made to establish various migrations back to Africa. And,
okay.
That was the Martin Delaney had gone to Liberia looking to establish treaties with the indigenous people there in that area. Of course, it wasn't Liberia then, but he had gone there to establish the right to take freed slaves back to Africa to establish settlements there. Many blacks would run away or go into Indian territory. I hope that one of my good friends and brothers, Brother Ronald Muhammad, is listening, because he's from Oklahoma and very familiar with the history of Oklahoma as quote unquote Indian territory. And that was territory that belonged to the Indians and was outside of the jurisdiction of the United States. And many of our people, the first chance they got to get away from the white man was to flee into Indian territory and establish towns of their own or mingle or integrate with the Indians, who were, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, original people as well.
Right.
So that was kind of the backdrop. And kind of anecdotally, we all heard about Black Wall Street. Well, Black Wall Street actually started off in the area that was Indian territory, where blacks had migrated there and set up their own reality in Indian territory. But Richard Allen, he was against the migration of blacks back to Africa as it was being promoted by the American Colonization Society, which was white folk who wanted to send black folks, free blacks, back to Africa. So they didn't want any free blacks in America. They just wanted either slaves or none at all.
Right.
So what Richard Allen was saying was, we've been here for hundreds of years now and made this country rich with our blood and our labor. Why should we be sent away? There's enough room here for us as well as them. And mind you, he wasn't necessarily talking about integration. He just didn't want to see free blacks being sent away from America so that our brothers who were in captivity in the South would have no allies in the North to agitate and advocate for them. So that's kind of the backdrop. This whole idea of integration still had not even come up, and I think that's something important to note.
Yes, okay. Yes, sir. And so I want to put it out here. This show is listener-driven as well. So if anyone has a question or a comment, please press the number 1 so you can get into the host queue. Again, we're talking with Attorney Warren Muhammad on his book, A Case for Separation, as well as Brother Khalil Muhammad. He also is on this panel. So if you have a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. So, Brother Warren, you know what I am, and please feel free to, you know, just tell us everything that, you know, making this case for separation. But I also wanted to ask you, at some point, do we go to integration? Because that's one of the places that you next go. Because this mindset of us wanting to be included is very different from these people that you reference in your chapter, such as Marcus Garvey is one of the people. He didn't want to be included. I mean, Noble Drew Ali, I think you referenced him, even though those kind of out of the timeline, but I just want to put that out there, even Richard Allen. So at some point, how do we get to this mindset of inclusivity where black people want to be with white people? They started to think, I guess, like what I would call slave-minded.
Right. I have always found that to be one of the most interesting and perplexing phenomena is how we went from being people who wanted to get as far away as we could, away from our slave master, from white folk, to wanting to be, to live next door to them, to just be part of their social equality. What did you say, Buddy Cat?
No, we wanted to sit in their restaurants and all that. I'm disagreeing with you.
Oh, okay. And I just always kind of pondered, where did this integrationist mindset come from? It didn't come from the slave plantation.
Yes,
unless we
right.
look at those who were allowed to live, you know, closer to the slave master and maybe get some benefit by living in the house. But, you know, history tells us that they colluded quite often with those on the outside. They, you know, would many times poison the slave master, cut his throat, you know, take food out to slave row, you know, because that was their family living out there, you know. So one of the things I came upon was this work done by a man called Gunnar Myrdal. Gunnar
okay.
Myrdal was recruited by the Carnegie Corporation, which is a large philanthropic corporation started by Andrew Carnegie, one of the great steel barons turned philanthropist. And they had been supporting Negro schools in the South, but their president, Frederick Keppel, decided to conduct a study on race relations. And he hired a Swedish sociologist and economist to do a comprehensive study of race relations in the United States and give a report on what he found. And that report was published in 1944, and it was called An American Dilemma. And one of the important things about it was up to 1935, Carnegie Foundation would fund what they call Negro schools. Or we call them now HBCUs, historically black colleges. They would give money to those schools for the education of blacks. They froze the funding until that study was completed. So during this interim period, those schools didn't receive the normal funds that they would normally receive. And then in 1944, Myrdal published An American Dilemma. And one of the, it was really a scathing attack on the way white folk had treated blacks and the whole thing about race relations. But the solution that he suggested is what was really very eye-opening, because the solution that he put forth was integration and assimilation. So he assumed it is to the advantage of American Negroes as individuals and as a group to become assimilated into American culture, to acquire the traits held in esteem by the dominant white Americans, and keeping an eye on social stability accomplished by gradual, carefully defined changes, as opposed to expansion in the size of the black population, and most of all, to the masses of blacks organizing themselves along racial lines. So here was a published work that promoted integration, assimilation, and was against blacks organizing themselves on racial lines. And I think one of the things that was really compelling about this was after this work was published, then the funding resumed to these colleges. But of course, now if that funding is influenced by this integrationist, assimilationist philosophy, and that's being taught now to the young college students who are coming into college in the early 50s, and I can't say for sure what courses Martin Luther King took when he went to Morehouse, but I can say that the timeline matches this advocacy of this new way of looking at race relations in terms of integration and assimilation. And I think many of our upcoming leaders and professional class were taught and adopted to some degree this type of integrationist and assimilationist ideology. So we start to see a shift from organizing as black people and for separation and self-sufficiency and independence to now pushing integration and assimilation.
Wow, that is very interesting. So, you know, when we have things like affirmative action today, you know, where we're still fighting to get into the companies of whites and to become, you know, to like Brother Khalil says, sit in their stores and just be a part, you know, of their society. And we see the shootings, we see the murders, we see the denials of the voting rights. Now we're looking at critical race theory legislation where they don't want to teach us our history. And so, but this, you know, integration, it goes on, you go on page 24 to, of course, quote the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in point number 9. And I think it's very important, Brother Warren, that, you know, I'm hearing some of what you're saying or your argument is that the offer of integration, we believe that the offer of integration is hypocritical and is made by those who are trying to deceive the black peoples into believing that their 400-year-old enemies of freedom, justice, and equality are all of a sudden their friends. And, of course, I'm quoting the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in point number 9. It goes on to say, further, we believe that such deception is intended to prevent black people from realizing that the time in history has arrived for the separation from the whites of this nation. So, Brother Khalil,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I know as we speak on Brother Warren's book, A Case for Separation, it's also important, you know, like I told you from the beginning, as to so many of your business ventures, so much of your leadership, you know, and leading people to have that mindset of building for self. I can say, of course, my own husband is one of those brothers who has also benefited from a lot of what you taught. And so, you know, with the build our own society, That's another portion, I think, of this program, because as Brother Warren has talked about separation and will continue, of course, to talk about his book, building our own society, building our own businesses, we want to talk about that too. So, Brother Warren, I know you want to share.
Yeah.
Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's absolutely the truth, sister. You know, we have been deceived so much, and we have to listen closely to what's being said. You know, like what I was speaking earlier about diversity. When we use the term diversity, you can take it for like in the 60s for the civil rights and for voting rights. Well, they included white women, and now they include Hispanics. And you know, when you're diluting the power, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment were written specifically to cure the ills that black folks had went through for 400 and some odd years here in America. But everybody, the way they use that to keep us from gaining power is they use these deceptive words. And I hear this diversity. I want to stick with that. We got to understand what the Caucasian or what the government or what white folks are saying when they use the word diversity groups and we're trying to have diversity policies. But that doesn't cure the ills that were given to us. Hispanic people, Asian people, they didn't go through what we went through here during slavery. But they all benefit from these so-called policies of integration and diversity that they use those words, where they benefit even more than us. And
that's
so they
right.
never really focused directly on our problem. Another thing I want to point out, and I hope everybody get a chance to see, is a word called meritorious manumission, which is actually a law, where they set up this law to where if you save a white person's life, save their property, let them know that some rebellion is going on, well, they reward you. So in modern day and time, if you speak in favor of the Dominus Louis Farrakhan, they'll take your job. But if you speak against them, they'll give you a radio show, a program. So that's still those policies that were initiated by this government back in the 1600s and 1700s that we really need to focus on, because they just changed the words a little bit here and there, and it's still the same thing going on. Black folks are a permanent underclass, according to the structure of the Constitution and these legislative laws that have been passed. And, you know, like the word Hispanics, what does that mean? Anybody that speaks Spanish? You know, we constantly call ourselves African Americans. Which part of Africa? And somebody, you can have a white person born in Zimbabwe and he comes to America, he's an African American. So he gets the same rights that we're fighting for when he didn't go through the same struggle. So, you know, I just wanted to point that out. Just, and from the book, The Case for Separation, you know, the attorney or brother judge points out all those facts. I just want to give some bullet points, you know, because I'm not a speaker, preacher, all of that. But facts matter. We need to understand the deception that's written in the Constitution and in all these legislative laws, the different policies and acts that were put into effect that are disguised today in different words, like diversity, minority, the poor. You know, that could mean anybody, but that's not repairing the ills that were done to black people for 400 years, and now for over 460-something years, we've been going through the same thing, but we kind of go in a circle when you talk about business and how we are excluded, but they talk like we are included. And we're actually not included because they're not directly dealing with the case or the problems or the injustices that were done to us. They lump everybody else in with us and hope that we're satisfied with it. Then our so-called leaders, they reward them for pushing those policies and continuing that kind of attitude to keep black folks in a permanent underclass position in this country.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's true.
Sister Pam.
Yes, sir. Yes,
I'd like to follow up on something that Brother Khalil just said and pointed out. When he's talking about the meritorious manumission.
Yes, sir.
That's something that creates these song and dance, what I call song and dance Negroes, who always will come out, they'll trot them out, and they will do a song and dance and tap dance and bug dance to the tune to walk back any real assessment of addressing the real problem. Every time they accuse the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of saying something, which are lies, and damnable lies, he's anti-Semitic. But, you know, they'll always find somebody who looks like us to come out and do their bidding. And that's kind of that manumission. As the brother said, they'll end up with a TV show or a podcast or some type of political appointment, you know, or just be allowed nearness to Pharaoh. And it's also important that we look at the actual words that are being said, because they will come out, for example, the Supreme, they have a celebration every year about Brown versus Board of Education, Supreme Court decision that struck down segregation in education. But if you look at the actual words that are used by the Chief Justice Earl Warren, and he made note of Gunnar Myrdal in American Dilemma in the Supreme Court decision. He relied on Gunnar Myrdal's work as authoritative. And then he said,
okay,
separate, inherently unequal.
Right.
And the word inherently, what made separate facilities inherently unequal? That was to strike down any effort for us to establish and have our own schools, businesses, and in this case, educational facilities. For us to organize a school amongst ourselves to educate our children is inherently unequal. Even
right,
if they had
right,
the same
yeah.
money, they had the same resources, same books, same buildings. But people they fail to look at those actual words while celebrating that decision. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. And like you say, because the initial argument was that we needed the resources that were being denied to us in the black community, and we could have provided
right.
for our schools. And so we never did just get, like you say, get the resources. They just declared them inherently unequal. Let's go ahead and take a comment from one of our callers. And Sister Marguerite, I'm going to open up her line. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Marguerite.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Pamela, and your guest. Your wonderful talk and some interesting points you all are making. One of the things, my husband has worked in IT for years. And, you know, he does contract work for different companies. And one of the companies he worked with was owned by a woman. And you know how when they get, you know, a white woman, if when they get very comfortable with you, they say things. And what she and her husband had done was gave her 51% ownership of the company. And because as a minority, because she was included as a minority, she was able to get this company, and this company was listed as a minority-owned business, although it really was her husband's company. And what I found
mm-hmm.
out consequently to, you know, studying the history and the things, they give you affirmative action, and they give you the civil rights, and they give you that, but they always have a back door written into the law, just as you
right.
have companies who have, you know, these programs that they give out, but they may get a put a back door in there so that they can steal and connive and do their dirty work, you know, while they're selling this program to the company. This is what America has done to black people at every turn. And you look at what they have done to the Indians. They have not upheld one treaty they have had with the Indians. But why the heck would we expect them to uphold any that they make with us?
That's right. Yes, ma'am. That's right.
Yes,
so
yes,
you're
yes,
so
yes.
right, Sister Marguerite. Yes, ma'am. So, Sister Marguerite, was that the
mm-hmm.
end of your comment, my beloved sister? Thank you
yeah,
so much for calling.
I had another
go
point,
ahead.
But I'll
go right
come
ahead.
In later
no,
if I can. Well, you know, one of the things that as I listen to our people, we're so engaged with the government. They need to realize these are people who put these laws in place. And these people who make up the government were slave owners as well, not just the president. All the way down the line, these people codified us being enslaved. So the Supreme Court, all of them, all the way down to the, you know, sit where the dog catcher was involved and deputized in our enslavement. So that's yes, the family.
No, that is so true. Thank you so much for that, Sister Marguerite. And I want to make one more quote from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that's from this week's final call. And I think it's important because, like Brother Khalil, I think, may have mentioned about how long this process has gone. We're at over 450 years. Brother Warren, you open up your book talking about how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches that separation. What is the quote? Teaching separation is, you know, all more
important than prayer.
More important. Right. So here he is in the final call. They're quoting, "They, the white race, are great scientists at tricking the black people. They were created by nature liars and murderers. As Allah has taught me, they are the first liars and human murderers since the creation of our earth and have sought every evil means to exterminate us from our earth without exterminating themselves." And, you know, so I just kind of wanted to stop there. I just want to say their entire rule over the black nation is a rule of death. They bring suffering and death upon us with a smile. Their show of friendship with you is only false. Both Bible and Holy Quran constantly warn us against taking them for friends. History shows that all black people who took them for friends learned later that they had been deceived. And that's a quote from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so I just kind of wanted to put that out there because – as last week's show that Brother Warren so graciously joined us on with Brother Dr. Akili, you know, we were talking about, you know, this depopulation agenda with these vaccines now and just a lot of the extermination, the shootings. We talk about that. So this is where we are. Separation, as Brother Warren is making this case, there's like no other choice. I think there's no other solution. Is what we're taught. So I know you were talking, Brother Warren, about the Brown v. Board and how, you know, they're trying to make it where the schools bring it. You know, we're inherently unequal. So as we go on, did you want to share some?
On that, please?
Go right ahead, yes, sir.
Okay, we talk about the educational systems and these corporations and. You have to have resources, what you both mentioned earlier. Resources come from the ownership of land and your own commerce, so that means banks, which as a people, we really don't have. The United States government, again, back in the 16, 17, 1800s, now distributed all of the property. Now I'm getting this from my brother, Claude Anderson. He's another good person that you should read on and know about.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that the land was maldistributed to the Caucasian race or to the majority white race, if you want to call it majority. They could come over here and the government would give them thousands of acres of land, give them funding to teach them how to farm, teach them how to cultivate, teach them how to bring out lumber, make bricks. And we absolutely had nothing. You could be just a regular white citizen that came from London or England or from the British colonies or wherever, Spain or Portugal. Because and we got to look at it like this. A Caucasian is a Caucasian, no matter where he say his land or his geology, where he come from. They are all the same people. They just got different ideas. They've been fighting with each other over resources and property since they've been on the planet. But we as a people, black people in America, have no real resources because we own no property. Now, you got a lot of us going out, we buying 100 acres, we buying this and buying that. But if the government or the United Nations saw fit to go over to Israel and take that land from the Palestinians and give them to give that land to the Jews based on the treatment they got in Germany, then our treatment is 1,000 times worse and hundreds of years longer, the government should give us resources. They should give us the land, but we have to come together as a people first. And so all these tricks of diversity, tricks of integration, has kept us from having the resources to set up our own schools. We did do that in many cases. If you look at the Tulsa, Oklahoma situation, they burned Tulsa down. They called Black Wall Street. They burned that down not because some brother raped a white woman, because there was an oil-rich land over their property that they wanted. So the incitement of the riot, you don't know which individual did it, but we got to look more at the federal government. The United States Incorporated is the one who owe black people. When we talk about reparations, reparations are not given to individuals. Reparations are given to nations. So when we come together as a nation, then we could have those type of resources, just like Israel was given those resources. We need to have those type of resources where we can set up our schools, our hospitals, our bank, feed ourselves.
Yes.
You know, because right now, Monsanto feed all of us.
Just to throw this in,
you know, the president talked about he's going to do something to cure cancer. Well, the first thing you need to do is stop them from producing cancerous food.
Yes, sir.
But you know, they always use these deceptive words. We are so deceived. We lack understanding of these legislators, politicians, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, they all agree with a constitution that used trickery to deceive us and keep us as permanent underclass in this United States.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. Brother Khalil, as well as our listeners, as we know, you know, this is the Elevated Places Network. And, you know, on the Elevated Places, one of our programs is Project Separation, and Project Separation is actually a show that is done once a month, and in that show, on that show, they actually show the different believers who have actually moved out, and not just believers, but you got black people around this country that are moving out. Like you say, they are buying land, and they are forming their own communities. You know, they've had the mayor out of a city outside of Atlanta where this brother, and you should check him out, Brother Khalil, because he's very smart. And he actually came together and he formed a municipal corporation. They've got land. So as you say, you know, of course, you know Dr. Ava Muhammad. She has done lots of those town hall meetings, actually moving out on the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so, you know, it's happening. As you know, and we believe with this type of oppression that we are being forced upon us, we know that God, we know that Allah is with us on our quest for separation. So it's a broad concept. So brother Warren, we have a caller. If I could take this one caller, or
sure.
And we'll come right back to you. So we have
yes,
Brother Shaheed has a comment, Brother Shaheed. Let's see. I'm opening up your mic. Brother Shaheed, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. In the name of Allah. Yes, sir. It's me. Yes, sir. In the name of Allah who appeared in the person of Master Fahd Muhammad, all thanks and praise are due for him giving us Elijah Muhammad, our messenger, our Christ, and now our divine warner, Messiah, and I miss the most honorable minister, Farrakhan. I thank them, and I thank him for giving us that. And when they say separate, we need to separate. And in our separation, we have to come together as a people and cut all our differences loose with each other. We have to cut our engrams of envy, jealousy, and come together and separate. In other words, when it's wartime, we can't be looking at the past, little itty-bitty faults and flaws, come together in the bunches and the people with like minds and start putting our monies together, even if we don't have a lot of money. we could put our monies together and start getting businesses. And when we come together in the name of Allah, he will help us. When two of you meet, he's the third. So if you got 3, 4, 5, he's going to be the sixth. We got to understand them things and learn how to go to him. When you say Master Farad Muhammad is sufficient for me and all my wants and needs, we got to believe it, breathe it, and will it. Just like the blood flow in your body. You feel the blood flow in your body when you meditate to feel it. And when you meditate and you pray, and when you meditate to get to this level of praying and willing your forces together and your mind together to make things happen and not go down, go to the past, we can make this happen with the money. I lived when Elijah Muhammad put the nation together. It was like heaven on earth. We had our stores. We had our clothing factories, our cleaners, our gas stations, our farmland. We had everything. We didn't even have to do anything with the white man. We had our fish coming in, our sardines coming in, clean food, healthy food. It wasn't a lot of people died then in the nation. Now we're eating everything, doing everything, running to the white man restaurant. We didn't even go to the show because we obeyed the messenger. Mm-hmm. Now, today, if we obey what God say do, we can have good homes, friendships, and money. We can have these, but we got to obey and separate and go to restrictive law. Do what's right. If you want to separate, do what's right, because we're going to need and depend on Allah. He's not looking at us with our little habits and our ways and looking at money to be God. We got to praise him and do the work, do the duty. Stop the little bitty petty stuff. We talking about separating. How you a warrior and you got petty stuff on your brain? We down in the foxhole and we can't get out the foxhole and fight because we talking about the neighbor next to us, our brother next to us, and the difference we have with him. We don't trust him. We got to trust and do our part. Responsibility on the older and mature brothers. We got to take responsibility on the years we serve and the knowledge we have and take part and guide the young into victory. This is history we're making. We're going to go in history talking about, I got a problem with Brother Thomas. I got a problem with Brother Johnson. In history, we're going down like that? No, sir. We got to go down fighting for Islam, because we will surely win.
Yes,
loving this mission, loving our nation, loving our paper that's out to the world, loving the position we in. We chose this position, and know this position is against these people that has been putting pressure, pain, and murder on our people, and we chose to walk the line and get across the line and save our people. Now we're going to have problems with our brother after we get over here choosing. All of us got faults. All of us got flaws. But the mission is bigger than the faults and the flaws. The mission is bigger than our difference with our brother. The mission is bigger than what we think about the money, the material, material gain. Get the gain of the love and our prayers for Allah. Five of them. Do them.
Yes,
do
sir.
Them. Do your prayers and then come up with after the prayers asking for Allah's grace and mercy. Ask for humbling yourself to Allah. And then we can separate because we're going to be in the mode of doing what Allah say do. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa-alaykum as-salam.
Alaykum as-salam.
Good to hear your voice, brother. Good to hear your voice.
Brother Khalil,
Sister Pam, assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam, Brother Shaheed. Thank you for that call, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Okay. Yes, sir.
Sister Pam.
Yes.
May I pick up on something that our beloved brother and we all look up to and mind and love our brother? Brother Shaheed. And thank you, Brother Shaheed, for calling in and giving us those words. But
that's right.
He talked about something that we discussed in the book about the mindset of being free and independent.
That's right.
And one of my favorite sections of the book, The Case for Separation, is the one called The Age of Discovery. And I'll try to be brief on it, but in the Pope of Rome in 1452 issued a decree called the Dum Diversus, and he said, we grant, and he was talking to Portugal and Spain, that were the two European countries of the time. And they were at odds on who owned, or who had the right to go to different places in the world. He said, we grant to you full and free power through the apostolic authority of this edict to invade, conquer, fight, subjugate, the Saxons. That was the European word for Muslims. And the pagans and other infidels and other enemies of Christ, and wherever established their kingdoms, deities, royal palaces, principalities, and other dominions. So it was through religion issued by the Pope of Rome that he authorized the European Caucasian to travel throughout the world and attack, fight, and subjugate us wherever found us. Based on a legal doctrine called of which is part of the United States law by the Supreme Court decision in Johnson versus McIntosh, where they adopted the doctrine of discovery. They said that when the white man landed, the indigenous people lost their right to have the land. Now think on that. So going back to what Brother Phil was saying, how they just gave these people land. When I was a little boy, I used to like to watch the cowboys, and I always wondered, why did white folks were in these wagons going west? You know, what made them go across the deserts and the hardship and fight Indians and everything? It was because the government had given them land that they had taken from the indigenous people. All they had to do was get there.
Right. Really?
They had the land. They had given them the land. And that was the motivation for them enduring the hardships in those wagons, was once they made it there, they had thousands of acres of land waiting on them. And to close with this comment, going back to what Brother Shaheed was saying, they adopted a doctrine called manifest destiny, which they believed that God had given them the right to come here and establish the new Israel, and they wrote about it. They put it in their books. They sang about it. They made poetry about it. They played the guitar and made songs about it. They had a whole cultural movement around their destiny and their right to be entitled to what they believe God had given them. And I said all that to say that is the mindset that we have to adopt. The Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan has explained to us, and he lectured, who are the real children of Israel? He cleared all of that up. It's us. Who has God come to give the kingdom to? It's us. So we need to write about it. We need to write our poems about it. We need to make our rap songs about it. Stop all this foolishness.
That's right.
Stumble. And there needs to be a whole cultural movement around our freedom, our justice, and our equality, and our independence.
That's right. No, very,
that's right.
Very powerful. Go ahead, Brother Khalil. I'm sorry.
So to point that out, that's another law that was put into the American Constitution in 1845, I believe it was, but the 1800s. It is very important that we go back. You know, when a plumber comes to your house to fix the leak, you have to go and shut the water off first before you can fix the leak. And what we do here, and what we do is good. Brothers and sisters buying land, that's perfect. But the government owe us. So that was another law, manifest destiny. That was back in the 1800s, I think 1845 is when it was. but they were given all the resources that they needed. And in our lesson, in the Final Call newspaper, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, one of the most important things about that newspaper that everybody should understand is an excellent paper. But the Muslim program, you know, mm-hmm. when I used to push the paper, because I never tried to sell it, but when I pushed the paper, I would push it saying, understand what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. Because point number four of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad points out that the United States government or our former slave owners are obligated to give us some land. We should, buy land and do what we can do, start businesses, get as much as you can.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But they They owe us a place. And if they don't give us that place, God is going to give it to us. Allah is going to give it to us. And you can tell by what's going on with the weather, you know, that this country is under siege. I haven't heard not one preacher other than the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan say that all of this havoc that America is undergoing is from God. Not a
That's
preacher,
right.
not a nobody. This is from God. And this is a real separation. We
yes,
will be
sir.
Separated. The
That's
Honorable
right.
Muhammad
yes,
said
sir.
That separation is not just an answer. It is the only answer.
That's right. That's right. Yes, sir. And that Allah will make you separate. Yes, sir. And you know, this is so beautiful. I love the spirit that Brother Shaheed brought, because this whole struggle that we're going through as the people, especially during the pandemic, Brother Khalil, we've talked before about the numbers of joblessness and how blacks, you know, in business, we have to build. And so when we talk, Brother Ishmael, who I just love his series talking about the struggle of life and the power in the darkness, and especially how we have to inspire our youth, as Brother Warren is saying, with the songs and the rap and the guidance. And so this is so important, and I thank you all for coming on. We're down to really the last 10 minutes, but I did want to, Brother Khalil, you got to tell us about some of the mindset about, you know, surviving and doing business and achieving outcomes in business, because I know you to be someone who has always been at the forefront of starting your own business. So can you tell us something about, you know, what is needed for these young people to succeed in businesses as we're doing, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, build our own society?
I would think, just Pam, every black man, woman, and child in America should read the message to the black man. That should be a standard. And all of that is encased in that book. We have the economic blueprint, the nation's program, you know, the history of what we've gone through, who we are, where we come from. That is the basis to start to understand that you must do for self or suffer the consequences. I haven't punched the clock by the grace of Allah. Thank Allah for it. Since 1986, when I was introduced to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who taught us to do something for self. Now, to start a business today is very difficult. If you want to cut back crime on the street, our young brothers are out there with guns and robbing each other and shooting each other because they don't have any jobs. When we accepted integration instead of separation, we left them vulnerable to where we were not creating any kind of institutional corporate jobs for them to deal with. They have nothing else to do but to try to take and rob. It's not an excuse, but it's part of the reason. So, you know, today in this society, to start a business, you got to know the A, B's, and C's. And we need to set up a system to where we can teach our young black men and women how to start jobs. When we protest about unemployment and all of that, we're talking about somebody else's Fortune 500 company. Black men don't own Fortune 500 companies. We don't teach, we don't own education institutions where we're teaching our people. We're not feeding our people. So the gripe that we have is with the Caucasian race or the United States government or those who own businesses that won't allow us to integrate in. So when you set up, when you read the book, Message to the Black Man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad suggests that those of us with the knowledge pool our resources. Well, we have many, many black billionaires out there.
Okay.
I propose
yes,
that we call all them together and have them. They have the resources. They have the money. You know, we talk about our athletes and our entertainers. They're not billionaires. They're on a paycheck. Folks used to talk about how athletes are paid too much. And I would always say, well, if I own a business and I can pay one employee $10, $20, $30 million a year, and I got other people on the team, football, I think you got 60 players on a football team, 15 players on the basketball team. If the owners have enough to pay one of them $10 million, $20 million, $50 million a year, then he got to pay all the rest of them. He got front office. He got staff. He got all of that. Can you imagine the money that he's making? They're not paying the employees enough. And then if you stand up for yourself and try to do something independent, you know, they'll do you like they did Whoopi Goldberg. And you sit down for 2 weeks. So the power is not in us integrating into corporations. The power is in us pooling our resources. And we got black billionaires in this country that we all need to, as black people, call them together and say, brothers, sisters, you are responsible. God has blessed you with billions. Now do something for your people independently. But then, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, if the government tried to give us Texas, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida as some land for black people, the insurrection on January the 6th would be child's play. The Caucasians in this country would go crazy. You know, so it's an uphill battle. But God is our salvation. Allah, who came in the presence of Master Farid Muhammad, is going to make the change. We're going to be winners, living or dead, like the messenger said. But the key is pooling our resources, taking those who got the knowledge, and put us together in a group. We got brilliant black people in this country. We all just so busy trying to push our way in and integrate in and talk about discrimination instead of coming together, pooling our resources and doing something for self. And we start at the top. We got black billionaires that are self-independent, but we don't say anything to them. And they really don't say much to us because if they did, you know, you would see a difference. So it don't start with, I mean, anybody can start a business. Business, you can go on the internet and get business 101, but we need to make that available to our young brothers and sisters to understand how the steps from A to Z on how to start a business, how to get your credit structured and all of that. But the big issue is we have no resources. We have no land that we can call our own.
Yes.
That's our big issue.
And as you're saying, though, it's a quote from Brother Sharif, one of my favorite articles. One of his quotes is that we have to, as you know, call on God. God in our life will make a way out of no way. And he also says how they're forcing us to be creative, to use our creative genius that God gave us to do something for ourselves. That's what we're going to have to do, you know, over and over. So, yeah, looking at the potential sources of funds to create jobs. Go right ahead, Brother Warren. We're down to our last 5 minutes, and so close out. Yes, sir.
Okay. One of the things is who are we going to have to speak for us? Because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I quoted him in the book, but it all comes, my book is just comes right out of Message to the Black Man. Muhammad Elijah Muhammad said, why can't we unite and move out? He said, well, we lack the knowledge of self, the knowledge of God, and the knowledge of devil and our enemy. But he also said, it is our leadership and the professional classes that are holding us back.
That's right.
And as Brother Khalil said, we have to hold this quote-unquote leadership and professional classes accountable
right.
for what they do and what they say on our behalf. So these people
yes,
out doing all this legislation and campaigning and vote for me and all of this, and then we got some people pushing for reparations and all of that. Who are we going to have to speak for us? I'll be quick.
Well,
yes,
Brian Flores can get what you want. Brian Flores
right.
stood up, didn't file a lawsuit for minorities, for diversity, but he filed a lawsuit for black coaches. And as
come
a result
on.
Of
yes,
that pressure, the Houston Texans plan to hire a white man who never coached in his life, and now they've hired a black coach, a black offensive coordinator, and a black offensive line coach because of the proper pressure being brought. So I close with
yes,
the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the one who has spoken for us and speaks for us, and we need to get
that's
behind
right.
him.
That's
he'll
right.
apply the proper pressure in the proper place to get what we want and what we need. I'll close with that.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. Because
man,
as you're speaking, Brother Warren, his last chapter in his book is entitled Why Follow Farrakhan. And so that is part of the book, A Case for Separation. As I reminded you all earlier, we do have projectseparation.com. That's projectseparation.com. You can go to, and you can also go to ministerava.com and see some of the videos on the separation projects. And these are actually people who are doing it. It's a beautiful thing. It's happening right before our eyes. With Allah's help, we are definitely going to be successful, inshallah. So I wanted to say thank you all for coming on, and you all can reach. How can they get in touch with you, Brother Warren, about your book, A Case for Separation?
Okay, my email address is warren@wfmlawfirm.com. And I got to get with Brother Khalil, because Brother Khalil, we got to set up some websites and emails for this book. But
yes,
you can
sir.
Email me at warren@wfmlawfirm.com. And the book is available on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and just put in A Case for Separation or Warren F. Muhammad. It'll come up all over. And I appreciate if you'll go there. Amazon makes most of the money that way. But in whatever way you can get it, I encourage you to get it, and I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. And so I would like to thank you, Brother Khalil, for joining us tonight, and thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. To hear previous shows, you can log on to the Elevated Places Network. I would like to thank the Elevated Places team. I would like to thank Sister Samaya, who is my producer. I would like to thank Sister Minister Ava Muhammad. I would like to thank Sister Donna, Brother Taryn, Sister Rona Muhammad. And I would also encourage us all and remind us all to listen to Dr. Ava's show on Thursday nights at 7 Central Standard Time, and that's on the Elevated Places Network as well. And I would like to thank you all once again for listening and ask that you tune in next week for more informative discussions. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.